Welcome to Just Another Hunting Podcast. This is Steve with Mountain to Coast Outdoors in collaboration with Joseph from Way Out West Adventures. We dive deep into the world of hunting, exploring tactics, gear, and unforgettable stories from the field. Join us each week as we interview seasoned experts and passionate enthusiasts who share insights and experiences to help you enhance your hunting skills. Whether you're a novice seeking guidance or a veteran hunter looking for new challenges, this is your go-to resource for all things hunting. Tune in each week to step up your game and to connect with the community who shares your love for the great outdoors.
What's up, guys? This is Steve with Mountain to Coast Outdoors. And before we hop into this episode, I need to ask you a favor. Head on over to the show notes and leave us a review, whether that's on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. We're trying to grow the show, and we need you guys to leave a review and maybe tell us what you like about the show. That's going to inspire these podcasting platforms to push our stuff out in front of more viewers, more listeners. So take a couple seconds, hit pause, leave us a review, and we'll hop back into the episode.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. Today, I have some local guys on to me, the Buck Runner crew. They just dropped a nice YouTube video, a muzzleloader Washington Roosevelt elk hunt, and they both knocked down bulls, which was an awesome video. I appreciate you guys hopping on here kind of last minute. Why don't you introduce yourselves and we'll get into this thing.
Yeah, of course. So I'm Tyler Murphy. Been born and raised down here in Southwest Washington. Been hunting since I was probably around 9 years old, from dad taking us out when we were kids, and kind of grew up on the logging roads out here hunting blacktail and Roosevelt elk since I can remember.
Right on.
Yeah, same story for me. I'm Jake Murphy. I grew up hunting with Tyler and my dad. I started when I was 8, and I've just been chasing blacktails and rosies here in Washington mostly, and then started branching out last couple of years, going to different states. So, yeah.
Right on, man. That's how I started too, the pounding logging roads. So, yeah. Uh-huh. So which one of you guys is the older brother?
So, yeah, I'm the older one. I'm kind of the video guy. We like to joke around with this is I'm like the technology and video guy and the photography guy, and then Jake's just the straight killer. You give that guy a tag and a direction, he's gonna go out and find the animal and get it done. But
right on, that's kind of how my dynamic is with my brother. I think he could care less to film any of this crap that we film. I was joking with him last year. I'm like, I'm going to buy another camera and I'm going to get another Peaks clip, and you're going to show up to hunting camp with a camera strapped to your bag. And he's like, if you put that thing on my pack, I'm throwing it in the bushes. So, it's kind of, I don't even really know why I started filming. It just got inspired by some of this YouTube stuff and figured, you know, what the heck, I might as well give it a shot. So here we are.
Yeah. So, with us, started filming. So really, I got into shed hunting. I was, 18 years old, and I was trying to figure out sheds, trying to figure out blacktail and Roosevelt. Where do they shed? How does it work? Where can I find them? And I spent, so much time researching online, trying to figure out, tips and tricks. And there was no YouTube videos on it at the time. And so I was like, you know what, as I learn and go, I'm just going to record everything I do. And that's how we started out, was strictly just shed hunting. And it was just literally watching me and my brother stumble through the woods and try to figure out what shed hunting was. And eventually, we've got to the point where we are, where we're pretty decent at it. I mean, we still go some days where we're getting skunked, but documenting that process and giving those tips and tricks out there was the main thought behind starting Buck Runner. It was all about shed hunting, because it's all I can think about a lot of the time is antlers.
But. Yeah. I noticed you guys find a ton of sheds, which, I would think, I'm not a shed hunter, so I could be wrong. It's definitely got my interest for sure, but I would think finding like Rocky Mountain sheds in Idaho would be a little easier, because where they're going to be down low. They're going to be on south facing slopes to get feed. It seems like it'd be a little easier to target, those animals than trying to find Roosevelt sheds, in my opinion. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
So I don't know. I have mixed thoughts on it. Is, you know, in my head, I'm like, yeah, it's so much easier over east or where it's open face and stuff like that. But then I've gone over and been completely skunked for the days that I've gone. Where over here, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of brush and like it's, you know, some of the brush gets up to your waist height sometimes and it's hard to see antlers that are laying on the ground. But there's not a compared to eastern side of things where they, you know, you can find that animals congregate on south facing slopes or whatever during the spring. Over here, they kind of do whatever they feel like doing. You just got to figure out where elevation the animals are hanging out at and what drainages they like, and you'll stumble on them. But yeah, the underbrush around here does make it tough. I mean, I've stepped on more than a few to be able to find them. But
yeah, I got to get out and do that. I got a couple sheds that I've picked up during some of my hunts. That one is on my wall because it's freaking huge. But yeah, I picked up another nice 6-point shed in Montana during a deer hunt. But other than that, I mean, I'd probably struggle out there trying to find them if I just went out on a shed hunt. So you guys have definitely got it figured out, it seems like.
Yeah, Jake also, he lived in Montana for about a year. And he cut his teeth on really finding a big mountain whitetail shed for a little while and got to experience that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
We're out in Montana, if you don't mind me asking.
I was living in Kalispell at the time. Yeah. I was only there for a couple months. But yeah, the whole time I was there, I was just shed hunting every day, basically. Yeah. So it was a lot of fun.
My brother, he lived in Montana for, I want to say, 4 or 5 years in Billings, working for a construction company over there. I always kind of give him a hard time about it because he didn't do very much homework when he was there. And it's like, dude, you had a good opportunity to make our learning curve a little easier. But yeah, he was more focused on work and stuff at that point. So is what it is.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, we know all about the learning curve going out of state. I mean, our family had never, my dad started hunting in his late 20s and he was the first generation of our family that started hunting. So he just, you know, did everything over here on Southwest Washington. And so branching out to other states is totally new for our group. And it's something that we've had to teach ourselves is we just pick a spot or a unit and buy a tag for it and go experience it and then learn from that experience. It's rough though. It is.
Yeah. So I'm a huge proponent of Go Hunt. I'm partnered with them now, but way before I was partnered with them, I purchased all that stuff with my own money and all that good stuff. I would still to this day, it's a phenomenal platform. But I'm curious, what are you guys using to get your tags and do your e-scouting and stuff?
So we just do a lot of research online, find the forums where people are talking about certain units. That's mainly what I do. And then I'm looking constantly at Onyx, Scout to Hunt, all these different.
All right, guys, quick pause to the episode. If you want to support the show, we would really appreciate it. It's going to help us keep this thing rolling. Head on over to mountaintocoastoutdoors.com/shop. Pick up a hat, maybe a sweatshirt or a t-shirt. Use code podcast at checkout, save 10% and help the show grow. All right, guys, back to the podcast.
Mapping apps, looking at terrain of areas and kind of figuring out, okay, what tags are in that area? Where might the animals be? But like I said, we've just kind of broken the surface of doing Idaho, mainly the last several years. This year, we're actually doing our first hunt in Oregon. We're going to do a Southern Oregon blacktail hunt.
Yeah.
So that'll be pretty exciting. And luckily we won't have to learn too much with that. We're going to go with Joshua Hubbs. There in November for that last week of rifle season, go down there and kind of learn from him how Southern Oregon blacktails act compared to, you know, Southwest Washington.
Yeah. That'll be fun. Are you guys, and I don't want to tell me a unit or anything, but are you going into like a wilderness area or more just logging country stuff?
Right. Right now, we don't have a clue where he's sending us. He says, you know, he's filming with a bunch of groups right now. And so he may or may not be able to join us on the group on the hunt. But he's probably at least going to send us some waypoints. I hope so anyways. But
yeah. Well, that'll be a cool experience. So let's talk about your guys' 2024 season. looked like you guys killed some bucks with your bows, and obviously you guys killed some bulls with your muzzleloader. Where did your guys' season start, and how did it all go?
Season started in August, as always, looking for that fall bear. You know, I got a curse on me. I've hunted bear forever, and Jake's the one that can kill him. I just can't seem to be in the right place, right time. And like I said, Jake's the killer of the group, and so he's got it figured out. Every year, he's getting his bear. So, Jake, if you want to.
Well, yeah, so starting out bear, I wouldn't say I haven't figured out at all, but basically spent a lot of time in an area where I've harvested multiple bears at, spent many days just glassing a lot for bears in that area, and tons of sign, never saw one. And we started switching up to different areas. And my brother-in-law actually killed a bear up by our cabin. And so we went up there, hunted that area, still no luck, lots of sign. And then I just picked a spot on the map that I've never hunted, and I really liked the area. I know there's a lot of berries up there. And so I went into that spot, first time ever, and sat and glassed all evening. And then I was just getting ready to leave, and the bear that I shot was standing on the hillside, like 75 to 100 yards away, just standing there looking at me, eating berries.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was pretty lucky. I mean, I was in the right spot, right time, I guess. But, yeah, just sitting in the berries, and got lucky walking out, seeing that bear on the hillside. It was pretty cool.
So was that early in the season, like beginning of August, or later in the season?
That was later. That was August 25th when I killed that bear. So I hunted all of August, getting just nothing, not seeing any bears.
We utilize a lot of that time as well, looking for blacktails as well. I mean, we're looking for that mature upper age class blacktail.
Yeah.
And so we spend a lot of time where we're probably looking more for deer than we should be looking for bear, but
yeah. I hear you guys there. I love that fall black bear season. I didn't get out at all this year for fall black bear, which is disappointing, but I picked up a couple llamas that I'm actually going to be picking up here in about 2 weeks. So I spent all of August, I brought home an excavator from work, cleared a bunch of my property, put up a fence, built a shelter. So I pretty much used like that last month before September got here to get that thing put together. I'm definitely looking forward to getting back up in the high country in Washington for fall bears in August, 2025 for sure. So,
yeah, that should be a game changer for you using, animals be able to pack a little bit.
Yeah. So we got three males that are, they're young. They're only 6-7 months old right now. So it'll be a little bit before I can pack with them, but my, brother Jake is hell bent on buying two males from Bo Beatty over there with Wilderness Ridge Trail Llamas that are already ready to pack. So we're hoping to, or actually I talked to Bo on my way home from Idaho, and he's going to let us rent four in September and then four different ones in October. And out of the eight, we're going to pick our favorite two, I guess, is kind of how he explained it. And we're going to end up with those two that are ready to pack. So the plan is to use those two older ones to teach these younger guys how to pack when their time comes. So it'll be a little learning curve for sure. I've never hunted with stock or anything, so, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. That's for sure.
Yeah. I could definitely see the advantage to it. It's something, you know, Jake and I we've joked about, but it's never something that we've even conceptualized, because it just seems like a big undertaking to add. Now you're adding animals to your hunt and taking care of them, and yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about it because I try to avoid like trailheads at all costs. Not at all costs, but I definitely don't hunt near them for the most part. I mean, from time to time we will be, but I try to stay away from them because people are obviously attracted to them. So I'm a little nervous about the pressure, but obviously the thought is if we can get in deep enough, it shouldn't matter. So we'll see how it goes.
Now, are you thinking about doing the high hunt for mule deer during that September timeframe then?
In Washington?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I've done a ton of e-scouting in a specific unit. over like the last 5 years, but I have not been able to convince myself to stay in Washington in September. I just can't do it. Maybe at some point I will, but I just, at this point, I'd rather go to Wyoming or Idaho or Montana or Colorado or somewhere else. There's just way more animals, you know, and, the adventure, something about the adventure going out of state, I really enjoy.
Yeah, I as well definitely romanticize going out of state more than I like hunting around here, even though, I mean, we've been very successful in Washington. Going out of state just feels like, you know, learning a new area, seeing the sights there, and then like it's just a different hunting experience, and it's way more exciting to me than I'm only an hour from gravel out here and I'm hunting. And yeah. So the open faces, the timber, the white peaks, the mountains, so that's my dream scenario for hunting. So I'm with you on the out of state stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to beat. Again, going back to Go Hunt, I don't want to just keep beating on them, but without that platform, I don't know that I'd ever, you know, it ever would have went out of state, because my dad didn't hunt. We grew up just doing a lot of fishing, salmon fishing, steelhead fishing, camping, stuff like that. But learning how to go out of state, just how to get the tags, felt like it was super overwhelming to me anyway. So having that platform has just made it so much easier for me to pick up tags every year. And now that I know how to do it, I've got points in, I think, every Western state pretty much. And I kind of have like a plan where I'm making like a loop, you know? So I can pretty much get a tag out of state every year at this point, it seems like.
Yeah, that's probably the way to do it. I mean, as more of these states, so Idaho in 2026 is going to go to a draw only. And so,
I didn't hear that.
That's what I've been hearing through the grapevine. It sounds like 26 is going to be the year they go to like similar to what Montana does, is a point system or a draw system for non-residents.
Yeah, so I actually drove over to Idaho and slept in the parking lot and got a tag, an elk tag and a deer tag for 2025. And I talked to Fish and Game when I was there, and they told me that they still hadn't made a decision yet. And that even when they do make a decision, let's say they do go to a draw, that it's going to take them a couple of years to implement it, because it's quite the process. So I hope they never do go to a draw. Just because I feel like if you're willing to take the days off work, go stand in line, you should be rewarded for that. I understand there's guys that live on the East Coast and Midwest that can't do that, but in my opinion, life isn't fair. You know, we all have things we can't do for certain reasons. And I don't want to see it go to a draw. I just feel like it's going to make it harder to get tags for everybody in the long run. And even some of the residents I've talked to in Idaho, they know that if it goes to a draw for non-residents, it's just a matter of time before it goes to draw for resident tags. It seems to be kind of the trend. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
I'm with you there on not wanting it to happen, but I could see why it would happen. I mean, it's more money for them. Because now you're getting the same amount of tags being bought every year, but you're also getting everyone that's putting points or buying the license every single year. So now you're getting a lot more money from the people, which there's no shame on them for doing it, but it does make it a little more difficult for us.
You know, I've never thought about it. I never thought about that point. That's a good point. Which if money's involved, we know where it's going to go. So mm-hmm. I guess we'll see what happens. I hope it doesn't, but I'm sure it will. It's probably just a matter of time. So that's another reason why I just feel like it's super important to get your points in Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Arizona. I mean, get them if you can afford it, because it's just getting harder and harder to get a tag. So, all right. So after that fall bear, I saw you guys were doing muzzleloader elk. Did you guys skip archery season for elk, or what was next?
Yeah. So normally we do archery elk. It's our favorite hunt of the year, essentially. And it's, you know, that's where we normally do all our filming and everything. But Jake had the opportunity to go to Arizona with a buddy. His buddy Steve drew a pretty nice tag down in Arizona with a group down there. And so he flew Jake down there to go hunt it. So, Jake, if you want to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so Steve drew the tag down in Arizona. I got down there I think the day before, and we scouted that evening, and we saw one cow, and that was it. And then opening day, first elk we got the bugle was first thing in the morning, and called him in to like 70 yards, I think. Didn't work out. He went and followed his cows, chased him all day, and then he started bugling midday again, and we snuck in around where we thought he was at, and he came right into like 20 yards. And Steve didn't range how close he was. He guessed he was 20 and he was like 10. So he shot him high and in the neck. It wasn't the best shot, but he whirled, ran off, his cows took off, and we sat there for a little bit, talked about it, tried to look at the video because I tried videoing everything when I was down there. I'm not even close to the way Tyler is with the video camera, so it is what it is. But so watched the video, couldn't really tell exactly where it hit. Went and found first blood, and it was super dark, and he hit him in the neck, so it definitely was an artery. So we followed blood for a little while, and then he turned and went up and met up with the cows, and then after that, the blood basically disappeared. I mean, we looked for a couple hours, but couldn't find anything. And then after that, we were in elk every single day. It was pretty insane. There's way more elk over there than over here. Like, it's, you go to one drainage call, if they're not there, you go to the next one, and there's just a pile of elk in there. And then you just chase them all day long, and it's just nonstop. It's pretty insane over there. But we ended up, I think we hunted like 11 or 12 days, and we got on, I don't know how many bulls, 20 plus bulls that the time that we were there, and didn't get any other shot opportunity with Steve. His cousin actually had tagged down there too. But yeah, a whole bunch of elk, and unfortunately they didn't kill anything. I left before the end of season. I had to go back to work, but they had shot a bull. And same thing, they lost him, his cousin did. So, I mean, they were in elk every single day. It was insane. But, yeah, it just didn't work out for him, unfortunately. But it is what it is.
Yeah, and you guys will be able to see. I mean, if you guys listening have watched the video that we just posted for our muzzy hunt, we had two little clips in there of some bulls that Jake had seen over there in Arizona. And the caliber of bulls over there is just – it's wild compared to, I mean, we're Roosevelt guys, right? So everything looks big, but when you're looking at upper 300 inch bulls, I mean, it's just completely different than the, you know, the 250 giant Roosevelts that we might see around here. I mean,
yeah,
it's not even comparable, but yeah. So that's how our September went, is a lot of me over here. I was chasing around blacktail with a bow, trying to get that done. We only saw like three decent, mature-ish bucks before the season started that we might want to go after, and I couldn't capitalize on any of that. Couldn't locate them after September 1st. It seemed like they had kind of gone more nocturnal. They weren't really in their summer habit anymore, and I couldn't find them. Only saw one on the hoof, and he got jumped by a bull actually as I was trying to get in closer to get a shot on him. But yeah, so archery deer for September kind of evaded us. And then we moved into October, first year ever muzzleloader hunting. We both bought muzzleloaders this year because it was our only opportunity to be able to chase bulls that were still in the rut. You know, it's either muzzleloader or rifle at that point. And so we opted to do muzzleloader, hoping that we could still utilize calling like we do. And so we hopped on that, figured out how to load and shoot and everything with a muzzleloader. It was a little bit of a learning curve, but got down real good. I mean, the use of optics now, for this season being the first year, we use a 1X scope or a red dot, really helps with sighting and really get dialed in compared to iron sights. Yeah, so then we moved into our first hunt of the year being that, and we always take off about a week to hunt together and film and try to get that going. And as you guys saw opening day, we were able to get a bull But they weren't talking. They weren't even giving us nothing. Normally, our game plan is always cover ground and call. And I know, you know, it's kind of frowned upon to call a lot. So, you know, some people do, some people don't. And that's our game plan is we call all day long and we're just covering ground until something responds. And then when something responds, we're on it. We're being aggressive and trying to get it going. And that's not the way this season worked. It was, they weren't really responding. We got lucky and his bull came in silent to cow calls. And it came into probably about what, like 40 yards, 50 yards?
From us? It was like 50 or 60, I think.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'm always elected as first shooter for elk. and Jake beat me to it. He got pretty excited and instantly just pulled the trigger. And anyways, we got lucky there, got him. And then later in the week, we got my bull. Got really lucky with that. I mean, we had to hunt like rifle hunters and essentially just cover ground, check clear cuts in the morning, walk through timber during the day, and just try to be where the elk are, you know, by luck, essentially. And happened to be in the right place, right time, where, you know, there's happened to be a herd of 20 or so elk.
All right, guys, quick interruption of the podcast. This is Steve with Mountain to Coast Outdoors, and I just wanted to hop on here to remind you that we have a bunch of discount codes in the show notes with awesome companies like Seek Outside, Go Hunt, Graxaw, Mountain Tough Training, Slayer Calls, Initial Ascent, and Treeline Pursuits Academy. If you're like me and you want to save a little bit of money, make sure you head on over to the show notes. We have direct links to their websites and the codes listed for you. So check them out, support the show. All right, let's get back to the episode.
1 4-point and then a 5-point. Jake pointed out. We were able to sneak in close enough to get a shot on that 5-point. And that turned out great. I do have one 5x6, but it's nowhere as mature as that bull is, even though it scores better. This one is one of the most mature bulls I've killed yet. His bases are just insane. His body was huge. Pretty blessed there. I mean, to get 2 5-point Roosevelts in 6 days, I mean, that's unheard of.
Yeah, that looked like a really nice bull. I watched that film yesterday and that bull looked heavy. Like it had mass all the way through the top end. So, yeah, I mean, I think the key to being successful in any hunt is I'm a big time caller. I love to call elk too. I've started to think about maybe backing off it a little bit because I do want to try to kill some bigger bulls, bigger, you know, more mature animals. And I think that those bigger bulls, yes, you can call them in. But they're a lot smarter, you know, they're a lot harder to kill calling. But I love calling elk. So I totally get where you guys are coming from, but if they're not answering, they're not answering. And if you're not willing to change your ways, you're probably going to eat your tag. So, I mean, you got to do what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily we've grown up in this area. So we know every drainage, every patch of timber, like the back of our hand, we shed hunt it year round. So, we know the majority of the time where the elk are going to be hanging out. So luckily we have that advantage. And, you know, for people that, you know, maybe can't be as successful as us or, you know, or wondering what we're doing different, it's Jake and I spend every single day off that we have. We're heading out in the woods and we're either shed hunting, scouting or checking trail cameras. We're doing something. And we're learning these animals. Not saying that's how you have to do it to be successful, but it's worked for us. Just a lot of time and effort, dedication.
Yeah, I noticed that in your guys' video that you guys had some trail cameras out. So do you guys run like a handful of them or do you have like 20 of them out there? How many are you guys running with?
No, we only probably have about 5 out at any given time. And that would be at the high end. Like I said, we generally know where our elk are hanging out. We use them more to know what caliber of bulls are kind of in the area. But a lot of the cameras that we run are going to be more for shed hunting, to be honest, is figuring out where the bigger bulls are hanging out in that early springtime where they're going to be dropping antlers is a lot of what we do. So like right about now, as we go back out and start setting more cams out to get prepared for, you know, this upcoming spring, utilizing them during hunting, it's not really our go-to. During the video there, we checked one midday, and that's not really normal for us. We were just kind of bored. It was super hot and we weren't getting up to dock. So it was like, yeah, let's check some of our trail cameras to see if there's anything on it. And that one, I mean, we didn't have anything but little 4-point on there. And Jake's buddy actually killed that 4-point later on in the rifle season.
Oh, yeah, okay.
His first big game animal. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's cool. I'm sure he was jacked.
Oh yeah. It was awesome.
Were you with him?
Yeah. He just started hunting last year and I was like, hey, I'll take you last year and then this year. And he decided to buy an elk tag and I was like, well, I hate hunting rifle elk over here just because there's so many people and you can't get away from anybody. But I took him out and I was like, I'm just going to hunt it how I would hunt it if I had the rifle tag, and we'll see how this goes. I know where the elk kind of hang out and what they do when they get pressure. So you're just going to have to follow me and we'll see if we can make it happen. And he hung with me all day. He was a trooper because we put on, I think, 8 miles that day before we killed his bull. And it was just going in every timber patch I could think of where these elk would be. And we bumped them in one of the timber patches and I kind of knew where they would go. So we went and checked one of the spots that they could have gone. They weren't there. And then we checked the second spot and they were walking right up the skid road to us. And that bull was like the third one in the line and he came out just perfect for him. And he shot him 3 times and he dumped on the road. It was pretty sweet.
Oh, nice, man. That's awesome. I'm sure he won't forget that one.
Oh, no. Bull. Yep. Yeah. He's pretty excited about it still. He still talks about it all the time.
Yeah. That's awesome. My buddy Joseph, he's a muzzleloader hunter. He hunts bow too, but he's killed a lot of bulls with his muzzleloader. And that's all he talks about is pounding the timber. And he's been super successful killing bulls that way. So any of those guys hunting Western Washington, that big timber is definitely a spot you want to be in. That's for sure.
Yep.
Timber and anything that has water in the bottom, you know, elk are bigger creature. Essentially you can think of them like cattle and they're going to be moving and being in those drainages and closer to water is what we found is kind of key, whether they're drinking it or not. It's just the timber might be a little bit better around those drainages to where they might want to bed down in it or they feel safer in it, whatever it is. And so that's one of the big things that we focus on for both shed hunting and hunting is looking for those big drainages.
Yeah, that's I'd have to say the same thing. I don't spend as much time over here as I used to, but I still get out, you know, every year and hunt this state a little bit. And that's just, I've noticed the same thing. Those big main drainages seem to hold elk, you know, all of them. So,
kind of ask you a question since you've been hunting elk in other states like that. We go to Idaho, we always buy the deer tag and wolf tags. You know, we've been successful with wolf and deer, but, elk for rifle seems pretty straightforward, but you said that you might be doing some September hunts as well. So what's hunting like for elk compared to over here with a bow in September? What's that about?
I've hunted elk archery out of state every year now for I think 6 years, and this year I had a Montana archery elk tag and then a rifle Idaho elk tag, which was my first rifle Idaho, or actually my second Idaho elk tag for rifle. But anyway, during archery season, Idaho has treated me really well. Like hike into a drainage, set up my spike camp. I've had elk bugle before I even got my tent set up. Like I didn't even call an elk or bugling. We've killed at least one bull every out-of-state archery hunt, if not two. I mean, so it sounds like a lot like your Arizona trip, not 350 inch bulls, but getting into multiple bulls every single day, hearing bulls bugle every night in my spike camp all night long, like to the point where you can freaking barely sleep, it seems like. But Montana, I've hunted Montana twice and I killed my first Montana bull this year, a small six, but I haven't figured out Montana. the elk in the areas I've hunted three different units. They're not as vocal. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's just the areas I've picked. It definitely hasn't been really, the first time I hunted Montana, I wouldn't say it was pressure related because I went in that first week of October and everybody was gone. Like we had the whole unit to ourselves for the most part. Now we got into elk every day, but I ended up switching from after like 4 or 5 days of hunting and bugling a lot, and getting no responses whatsoever. I ended up switching to just cow calling. And about halfway through that hunt, I started calling in a lot of bulls, cow calling, but they were coming in silent. So if you guys know how that is, I'm sure, you know, it's like they're on top of you before you realize they're there. And with a bow, you know, you got to range them. You got to pull an arrow out of your quiver, you know, get drawn back, all that kind of stuff. And by that point, they've already busted you and they're gone. So we didn't fill our tag on that trip. And then this year in Montana, we hunted two different units. The first 4 days of that trip, we glassed a ton of bulls. It was more broken country, a lot of sage, but there was still a fair amount of dark timber. But there was also a lot of road access that I thought was closed like two tracks, but people were using those two tracks with quads and side by sides. There were outfitters in there in spots I didn't think they could get to. So long story short with that, we ended up moving units into a more kind of wilderness, like dark timber, nasty, like way less roads. And our second day in that unit, we called in the bull that I killed. But Montana's been, for me, for elk's been tough. I'm convinced that I just haven't found a good area yet, but Idaho's been amazing. So this year I'm hoping to draw Wyoming. My brother and I both have 5 points. We're kind of like right on that threshold. 5 points true last year. And the general, we've been debating if we should put in for the special. I don't really want to pay $2,000 for an elk tag, but I also don't want to wait. And I'm kind of at that point with my points that I kind of need to draw Wyoming to fill my September slot this year. So I'm really looking forward to that. If we draw, Wyoming's supposed to be amazing. I've never been there, but it's supposed to be amazing. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Exciting. Yeah. One thing that we've kind of, we haven't hunted elk out of state yet. I mean, besides going on a hunt to help out with calling and everything. But every year in Idaho, when we're over there throughout October, those bulls are still bugling. If you're back, we like to get our camp going a little bit further back, or we hike further back during the day. And it seems like those elk are still running with the herds. You can still find really good caliber bulls, and they're pretty vocal all throughout October. And so that's one thing we've been talking about and trying to convince ourselves to do, is just pick up that elk tag if we can, and get in there with a rifle. But we haven't really talked about doing it with a bow. It does seem, because it's such a large country, it seems intimidating, where over here, we know where all the elk kind of hang out. We know kind of the habitat that they're going to be in, where, you know, we're, you know, a handful of hours away from Idaho and being able to scout that and figure out what the elk do in September. So it's not entirely feasible to, you know, pick up everything and just go learn it. And so we've just been observing that October and early November timeframe and seeing what the elk do. And we'll probably do that in the next couple of years. Well, it depends on if there's a draw or not, but Jake's really pushing for me to switch everything and start putting in points for Montana. He's been a little obsessed with Montana lately. He's got a couple points in there for deer, and I need to start accruing some points. It's just hard, you know, when you go over to Idaho so often and you see the caliber of bucks that you can get over there, or that we happen to come upon. It's like, why would I want to trade one state for another just for another mule deer? But there, it looks like there is something to the season in Idaho for mule deer, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would say Montana is awesome for mule deer because you can hunt them during the rut, right? Yeah. Obviously, in Idaho, you're hunting them in October, which, in my opinion, and you know, a lot of guys probably feel the same way, is like the hardest time to kill a mature mule deer. They're hard horned. The big bucks are by themselves. They're timbered up. They're kind of like blacktail that time of year. They just don't move as much. Now back to the rifle elk thing in Idaho. I had a mule deer tag and a rifle elk tag in Idaho this year. And the bull I shot was still bugling October. I think it was like the 20th. We actually shot two bulls back to back out of the same herd. We chased this herd for three freaking days, miles and miles and miles. They were just like one step ahead of us and they were moving a lot. But if I was you guys, I would have a rifle elk tag in my pocket when I'm hunting deer in Idaho, because we seem to find bulls in the same kind of general areas we're finding bucks. And what we're planning on doing this year is hunting like the last 6 or 7 days of that deer season, and then the first like 6 or 7 days of that rifle elk season. And that kind of gives you some time to hopefully get your deer tags punched, and then, you know, have a good amount of time to try to fill your elk tags as well. And then you're kind of in a way killing two birds with one stone. Or if you find like a big bull, you know, during that deer season, he's going to be in that same general area to come opening day of elk season. So, I definitely started trying to put a rifle elk tag in my pocket when I go to Idaho. Cause yeah, I mean, I killed my biggest 6 point this year with my rifle over there. He was a stud. So it's a fun
right. hunt. Yeah, no, it's definitely worth doing. Definitely.
Yeah. So, what's your guys' plans for 2025? What do you guys got, anything dialed in yet? Or are you still putting your plan together?
So the only out of state tag that we got planned so far is that the hunt that I was talking about earlier with Josh Hubbs for Southern Oregon. I'm going to experience that Southern Oregon blacktail and what that's like, being able to hunt blacktail that reach over 100 inches. Yeah. Sounds fun. Over here, you're not going to find very many that reach that threshold, at least on the side of things that we hunt or the units that we hunt over here. So definitely going to be doing that first week in November. And then we're going to go back to archery elk September for over here for Roosevelt's. And then it'll be our normal. We'll try to pick up a multi-season deer tag in Washington and hunt, you know, September, October, November with different weapons for blacktail. We do bounce a little bit over in Eastern Washington occasionally, in Central Washington, to try to cut tags on mule deer. But, you know, trying to find a really good mature mule deer is also a tough thing to do in Washington if you're not willing to go to super high remote places. They seem to be more migratory in a lot of spots, similar to Idaho. And during that October timeframe that Washington does a rifle season, it's kind of tough to get those to come down to the elevation that you can hunt at and be in open country. So that's kind of our plans. Nothing too crazy. We're excited to get back to archery hunting though, for elk. Cause I mean, like I said, calling is our game, and there's nothing like having bulls bugling at you and getting one fired up enough to come running in. I mean, we've done that so many times now. That's what we love.
Yeah. It's hard to beat. So how about spring bear? Have you guys ever thought about hunting Idaho spring bear or Oregon spring bear or something like that, where you can kind of use the spring time frame to maybe go learn just like the road system of a unit for mule deer or elk, and, you know, have a spring bear tag in your pocket at the same time?
You know, we've talked about spring bear. We've never pulled the trigger on it. As easy as it is to find bear in October in Idaho, there's almost not a need. We saw, what, 4 or 5 bears this year. We had a bear coming into camp every night in Idaho. Yes. I mean, they're pretty easy to find if you're willing to spend the time glassing and looking for them. But the spring portion of it, it's always been something that's been interesting to us. It's just, are we willing to give up the time and go over to Idaho and, you know, take a week of vacation or whatever it is to be able to go over there and hunt them, when, you know, it could be shed hunting over here. I guess we could also do shed hunting and spring bear at the same time over there, but yeah, it's not something that we just haven't ever pulled the trigger on. We've talked about it. It's just not overly appealing.
Yeah, for me, I love it. It's been locked up in the house, it feels like, for like 6 months at that point. It's just nice to kind of get out and stretch the legs, maybe test some new gear, you know, learn some new country. There's some awesome spring bear country. You can pick up a tag every year, find bucks, find bulls. It's always something I look forward to every year personally.
Yeah, it just sounds like you're missing out on a little bit of shed hunt. You need that in your life.
Yeah, you know, honestly, yeah. Washington. I just wouldn't even know where to start, I guess. I mean, I guess after talking to you guys about it, you know, just maybe hiking those same hills I've hiked for the last 15, 16 years, chasing roses with my bow would probably be the place to start. But I've always looked at shed hunting like, you know, like out of state, like, okay, south facing slopes, where's the feed? That's where they're going to be. Go hike those hillsides. I definitely have thought about it though. I've never done it.
No, I think you're onto something with, you know, having a tag, like a spring bear tag, where you're kind of filling that time slot in between, you know, the fall hunts and not having to go so long, you know, 9 months without hunting or packing a weapon to, you know, harvest something. But yeah, shed hunt over here. That's, you know, why we started the Buck Runner channel and filming everything, just because I couldn't find any content that would tell me where to find blacktail shed. Tough. Now there's it seems overly popular now, and yeah. Kind of kick myself for that a little bit, but yeah, it's definitely a learning curve. It's challenging, and you gotta be willing to get wet and go in some nasty spots, so it's not for everyone. I definitely wish sometimes that we didn't live in Washington, where we could be in a more mountainous state and open country and kind of traverse those instead, but no, that's not the hand we were dealt. So
yeah. So what other films you guys have coming out for this year?
Unfortunately, so Idaho, this year we were in Idaho and we decided not to be shooting any average size bucks. We were going for that upper age class, and you know, that October hunt is tough. We only located one buck that was deemed a shooter, and I made a bad wind call. It was a 750 yard shot. We came out on this ridge and I glassed him up. He was already staring at us because I silhouetted myself on the ridge at about 500 yards from him. And I had Jake come over to verify that it was a good buck, because I'm as much of a shed hunter as I am, I'm horrible at spotting antlers on animals. So I had to have him verify that it was a good buck. And instantly he's, you know, getting on me about, why am I letting this buck walk away that's big? And we were estimating probably around 160 class buck, which is a decent buck.
Definitely.
Anyways, he made it up to 750 in a burn, and I dialed my gun. I take long shots all the time. I knew everything about it. And I just, for whatever reason, I thought there was no wind, and there must've been about 5 miles an hour wind or something. And was a little off, and he got away. And, a lot of the other bucks we were seeing like that average frame 3 point, nothing that got us like super excited. And it was a struggle. We hunted 9 days and that was the only mature buck we had a chance at. Everything else, I mean, we saw hundreds of deer, just nothing that really got us too excited. So unfortunately, people are going to have to wait till spring for shed hunts to be posted. We won't be posting anything from Idaho. I know some people do it, but I have a hard time putting up videos where I'm not successful, because I like watching videos where people are successful. I like seeing, you know, I like seeing the kill shot. I like seeing the struggle and them being successful and learning from it. And so I have a hard time myself putting together and editing a video and putting it out there with, there's no end result. There's nothing, you know, no reward for the viewer, I guess. And so I won't be putting that together, and so the muzzleloader hunt's it for the season.
Yeah, I mean, I hear where you're coming from on the not punching a tag thing, but I would encourage you to still put a film together. I think that, you know, the success rates are really low, especially when you're trying to shoot an upper age class animal, and I think a lot of people understand that, and I think a lot of people can still get a lot of useful information out of a film, even if you don't kill an animal. It still tells a great story. It still shows the struggle. It still shows, you know, beautiful scenery and all that stuff. A lot of guys don't fill their tags. And I mean, a lot more people can relate to not filling their tag than the guys that do fill their tags consistently. So I get where you're coming from, because I've done the same thing. I've not posted videos where I have hours and hours of footage because we didn't kill. But then I have posted a few videos where we didn't kill, and some of those videos have gotten a lot more traction than the videos where I did kill, to be honest with you. So, I mean, I guess take that for whatever you will, but I think you'd be surprised with the response you might get.
Yeah, no, I understand. And I get it. It's just rough for me. I mean, so I've been, you know, we've been filming now for, probably since 2014. And so it's always been tough for me to put out stuff that, isn't successful, especially when you hold yourself, you know, such high regard about being good at what you're doing. And so I'm sure you feel somewhat similar, is when you don't notch a tag, you're like, man, you know, I'm not as good as I thought I was, or, you know, humbles you a little bit, and I don't want to show that. And that may be a character fault of my own, not wanting to share that and, you know, be vulnerable in that. But that's pretty much my thought around it, is, man, I, you know, I have myself where I expect to notch these tags, and the video just proves the failure of that. So, no, I'll definitely take into consideration what you're saying. And I think, you know, I filmed the entire hunt in Idaho. I have hours and hours of film, and it's great, but there's no result. So it's hard for me to put something together when it's just like, if people want to, you know, hike along with me and see, you know, animals, then yeah, sure, they're gonna get a good video. But if they want to see success, it's just not gonna be there. That's the rough part about it.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it though, like 99% of our films are us hiking around, right? You got about a 30-second clip of a kill shot, if you get the kill shot. I mean, I struggle to get the kill shot a lot of the time. And so, you know, half my videos are us walking up on an animal that's laying on the ground. It's like, wait a minute, the kill shot, where was the kill shot? But I get where you're coming from.
Isn't it amazing? Like, you would think that, you know, yeah, okay, when he's about to pull the trigger, just start the camera and film it. But like, it's not that easy. And, you know, and so we've missed the majority of our kill shots. I think we only got a limited number on YouTube that actually have the shot in them. And it's tough to do. One, if you're solo and trying to self film, that's incredibly hard, trying to set up the camera, keep everything in frame, just set up for the shot, and then you're missing things. It's hard to do, and it's hard to film. So I appreciate the guys that can leave good comments of appreciating a film for what it is and the effort behind it. Because it's hard to film. I mean, I get asked all season long from guys, you know, when's the next video coming out, and stuff like that. It's hard to film. It's, if you don't have a dedicated camera guy whose only job is to film and doesn't have a tag, it's going to be hard or somewhat impossible to get everything captured perfectly. And so it's something that we've struggled with. We've actually talked about maybe in one of the seasons coming up where Jake has an archery tag and then I just don't buy an archery elk tag and I just follow along with the camera to capture everything. I mean, yeah, it would accomplish our goals of getting a really good film, but then it's like, you're missing out on your favorite hunt of the year, you know, that little bit of sacrifice there.
Yeah, dude, you're preaching to the choir over here. Like, filming hunts is so much harder than it looks on YouTube. I mean, it just is. And not only filming the hunt, but like getting enough of that B-roll footage to kind of fill in those dull times where you go 6 or 7 days before you fill a tag, right? So it's so hard to tell a good story. The guys that are really good at it, like, you know, Brian Call, I mean, those guys are just freaking incredible. I have so much respect for not only the animals that they kill, but how well their videos are put together. It's just unreal. People have no idea how hard that is. So, yeah, I mean, we're in the same boat, dude. I've missed so many kill shots. I've missed film, you know, wolves and archery kill shots and rifle. I mean, so many of them that it's like, you know, even when I'm putting the video together, I'm like, I've got all this awesome footage and I feel like I'm missing that one key piece. But, you know, I think you just gotta keep working at your craft like anything else and figure out a way to be a little more efficient, maybe when those moments kind of come together. And, you know, I was thinking about that a lot this year, about like lens selection, for example. My brother shot a pretty nice mule deer buck the second morning of our Idaho hunt. It was like just barely light enough to see. And we crested this saddle on our way to drop into this big drainage to start glassing in the morning. And I saw two frames like silhouette on that saddle. And I'm like, dude, that one buck to the right looks pretty freaking good. And I had a little 17 to 28 lens on my camera at the time, which obviously doesn't have the reach to even see a deer right at that distance. And so I missed the kill shot because I had a lens. I mean, I could have filmed it, but the lens didn't have the reach. So I've been like searching, thinking about like maybe running like a 24 to 240 or something a little bigger. So when those situations do pop up where, you know, you jump across an animal and you get a shot, you can actually get it on film, you know?
Yeah. So getting into camera gear a little bit. So I run an 18 to 400 Tamron lens. I sacrificed a little bit with the quality there, but I'm able to capture those longer shots if needed. We do film a lot through, we use the Alden adapters for our scopes and everything. But if it's an elk coming in and he's 100 to 200 yards out, I can get him with that 18 to 400 pretty well. It's not going to be the highest quality footage because it's, I think the f-stop is 3.5 at the low end. And so it's not going to be amazingly lit and nice footage like you would be with like a 1.8, but it's heavy and bulky. I mean, this thing, when you're packing it around, it takes up some room and it's heavy. And that's another part to hunting with a camera that's just rough is now you're adding weight. You got batteries, SD cards, you got backup battery. I mean, just so much gear just for cameras. And that's why this year for muzzleloader, I was filming everything with my iPhone. I got I think it's an iPhone 15. I don't know what model it is to be sure, but I filmed with that. It does well enough. It's waterproof. And, honestly, I was being lazy. I knew I needed to put a film together because people were asking me about it. And, there are those loyal people that have watched me from the beginning that want videos. And, I feel bad if I'm not going to record a hunt. And so, I was lazy. I'm going to admit it. I didn't really want to film this hunt. And so I just filmed it all with an iPhone. I knew that we were probably going to be successful notching tags. We're usually pretty good about that with elk over here, but all iPhone. And then, as it got closer to the end of the season, I still haven't filled my tag. I started getting lazy. I was filming like maybe one B-roll clip a day. You might have saw in the video where there was a couple days where there was one clip, and then it was onto the last day where I ended up killing. But I gave up. It's hard. Filming is rough, and I commend anyone like you were saying, like Brian Call, where he's able to capture a amazing documentary of his hunt and also be the hunter. I mean, it's phenomenal, and I aspire to be like that. But camera gear for guys that are listening to this or whatever, camera gear can be expensive. It's not a cheap thing to get into, and when you're adding that onto the expense of hunting, it's a little bit. So if you're just starting out and you want to start capturing hunts, I had a guy hit me up yesterday about how can he get into filming hunts. Start with an iPhone. That's how I started out. I just turn your phone sideways onto like a landscape mode, and every video that you do, film it like that and just video everything. And then something simple to do is plug it into iMovie. It's already installed on your phone. Cut it together, and then you got yourself a video. That's literally how we started out. It doesn't get any easier. So for those guys that are thinking about, hey, I want to capture my hunt, I mean, that's the way to go. And I tell everyone that is you don't need fancy equipment. It makes it a better hunt film if you do, but iPhones and everything, good enough quality nowadays that people are going to enjoy them. But that's my rant. Sorry, I went on there for a little bit about gear, but
oh no, man, don't apologize. Yeah, I mean, I could talk about camera gear now for a while. I'm in the same boat, like construction guy. Camera equipment, YouTube, computers were foreign to me until I got into this stuff. I started out with a Canon T7i I got from Best Buy, I think, for like $600. Yep. I didn't know anything about f-stop or lenses or anything. And I think it's just like anything else in life, man. The more you do it, the more you learn. And you know, there's a lot of free editing software out there. I started with Filmora, I think, which was a free desktop version. And there's, I think, DaVinci Resolve now has a free version. There's a lot of free versions of editing software out there. There's a ton of content on YouTube that can teach you how to edit. That's how I learned, you know, from there's so much stuff out there on YouTube to teach you how to do this stuff. And yeah, I would say to those guys that are interested in starting to film their hunts, man, I mean, reach out to people that do it, because most hunters are willing to help you. At least that's been my experience. I've asked so many other guys that film their hunts questions about cameras and camera gears and computers and YouTube, how to, you know, set up a channel and all this stuff. And most guys are willing to talk to you for as long as you want to talk, and they'll help you if you want the help. So.
Yeah, definitely. If anyone wants to reach out to me, I'm more than willing to help. I'm very open to messages, and I most likely will respond to you and try to help you out in the right direction. I think it's good. I mean, one of the backstories behind why I really truly like to film is my son. He's turning, well, he's 7 now, and I'm gonna start trying to get him on the mentor program for Washington State. But I want him to be able to view my hunts down the road. Maybe I'm not around, you know, in the years to come, and he wants to look back at what did his dad do or whatever, and share those. And so having something out there, whether it's posted to YouTube or not, just having those memories to where he can look back at that and see, you know, those hunts that I was on and those adventures I went on, maybe that inspires him. That's a big thing, you know, just document your hunts, take all the photos, take more photos than you think is necessary, and take the time to do those. And I think it's valuable. I think a lot of people look back through their, you know, their life or whatever, and think they didn't capture enough. You know, they want something to look back on in the future. And so I think that's a good thing, is just record and capture everything.
Yeah, I agree, man. When I have my camera on me in the field during the hunting trips, I'm like sick of this thing, right? Like, I don't want to deal with it. But then when I get home, I'm so glad that I actually did it. I never regret doing it when I get home. So as much of a pain in the ass it is during the moment, I'm always happy I have the footage when I get home. And it's really fun to share it with my family. Like you're saying, I have a daughter and a son, my wife, you know, mom, dad, they all enjoy watching that stuff. YouTube, it is what it is. It's a grind, but yeah. So, well, all right, guys, I've had you for like an hour now, I think. It's the weekend. I'm sure your family wants to spend some time with you, so I'll let you go.
Okay. Yeah, it was nice chatting with you and getting to meet you. I look forward to conversations in the future. Hopefully we can get to know each other a little bit better. And thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. Man.
Absolutely. It's nice to talk to some local guys. So we'll have to stay in touch for sure. And maybe we'll connect on a fall bear hunt or something one of these times.
We'll stay in touch, and maybe I can get you out for some Roosevelt sheds or something.
Yeah. You know, I bet I'd have to guess, knowing where you live. Yeah. Anyway. But I'll turn this thing off. Maybe we'll chat a little bit.
Okay. Sounds good.